Blog Talk Radio.
Terminal fans, QT and Sun Guy here with you on another Sunday afternoon, first one of March for 2020. Some show notes if you're looking for some wrestling today. DOA Pro Wrestling happening today in Portland, Oregon. Primetime Wrestling in Paris, Kentucky, rather. And, of course, Blue Collar Wrestling, where you can find myself and QT Vokes later today. That in Portland, Oregon, at the North Portland Eagles, of course. And last night, of course, we're coming off the huge Northwest Pro Show. QT, what a shocking turn of events last night.
Talk about shocking turn of events. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners, you had a slightly, how would you say, uncouth or slightly surprising approach by Dave Turner in the ring, as concerned with your referee duties? Yes.
He did not like the fact that I counted to 10 while he was on the floor, which, of course, is a disqualification, nor did Dave Turner like the fact that after he attacked me, I accepted that as a challenge, and I pinned him 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. I beat Dave Turner.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of talking about even before the match began, as your referee duties, and before J.D. Mason had even entered the ring. Can you tell us, even before the bell rang, what went down? It was slightly eye-opening.
Well, Dave Turner wanted to make sure I didn't have a foreign object to use against him, so he frisked me, and he wanted to make sure I'd been doing my squats, so he checked my gluteus maximus to make sure they were firm enough for his liking. They were.
Yes, that brought quite the reaction from the crowd. Yes.
I was free of foreign objects. I beat him clean in the middle, 1-2-3.
Boy, I hear that, yes. And now, you did get the pin over Dave Turner, yes. But who was ruled the eventual winner? Was it indeed J.D. Mason?
He won via countout. I won via pinfall. We both beat Dave Turner.
Okay. Now, the Northwest top 9 7/8 rankings has been slightly delayed due to a lack of people putting in their application. If I can put this 9 7/8 Northwest rankings out, where do you see yourself being ranked for your victory over Dave Turner?
Number 2 1/4.
That's pretty high, yes. Will this be your debut ranking of 2020?
I believe it would be, but keep in mind, Dave Turner, we forgot to mention earlier, will be on a show tonight called Suburban Fight Pro Wrestling. That's in Seattle. He's going into that with a loss. So I may have just softened him up for his opponent.
Nice. Do you know who his opponent will be tonight?
I believe he is teaming with Guillermo Rosas versus Chris Ross and Jet Knight.
Wow, Jet Knight, huh? You know, there was a tennis shoe back in the 60s. And I believe early 70s called Red Ball Jets.
How many of those pairs of shoes did you have?
Well, I think I had one pair of Red Ball Jets.
Oh, nice. Were they the color red?
No, they had like a red ball on the heel of the shoe. Red Ball Jets. Yes. A red ball.
Was it like a golf ball?
No, it wasn't that large. It was kind of like a Nike swoosh stripe. Swoosh. I'm not saying that. How come I can't say swoosh? Swoosh.
I don't know
stripe.
Why I can't say swoosh.
Well, I only bring this up, Sign Guy, because I've never seen a WUW or a PWF wrestler wear Red Ball Jets. Red Ball Jets.
When was the last time they made such?
Holy smokes, that was quite some time ago. Luckily for this show and our listeners, I am at a computer. Yes. And I am now, for the first time in Turnbuckle Turmoil history, looking up Red Ball Jets. This is going to be huge. It really will be. I only say this because I'd like to start a Red Ball Jets wrestling footwear with a lucky Northwest wrestler. I think I can make this happen.
Now, would that lucky Northwest wrestler be Real Talk Richard?
Oh, I don't know. It might be Chuck Payne, who did very well last night, or maybe even JB, who was in action against the Lumberjack. And before I begin my Red Ball Jets wrestling footwear quest to find a wrestler, what did you think about the shocking turn of events with Lumberjack last night?
I was not a fan of it because he punched me in my face.
Yes. Well, did he actually make contact with your face with his fist, or did you land kind of on the mat with your lower mandible jaw?
He hit me right in my face. But QT, I believe our guest is with us now. I want to bring him on. We are joined by the Woo America champion, who will be defending his title later this very month against Paul Cerberus. Jackson Bourne, welcome back to the program.
Well, it's great having me. Thanks for having me, guys, again. And you're right. March 14th, 2624 6th Street. It's going to be a great show.
Our last show, you were immersed in a bit of controversy with Paul Cerberus. The thing kind of went off the rails there. Henry Miller initially was going to make you defend that title on the spot last month, but Chef discussed the situation with him. It was made non-title. Later that night, it was determined you would defend said title against Paul Cerberus. What's been the issue with you and Paul Cerberus? Can you tell the fans what's been going on between the two of you?
Well, if you're a fan of WW then you, or SCW when this rivalry started, you would know. I mean, me and Paul, we were in the same group when I started in World Underground Wrestling. We were both in South America. And, you know, I was the muscle. I was the guy they came to when they didn't want to deal with it on their own. They told me to go down there and beat the guy up. That pretty much was my job when I was in South America. Now, you see, Paul has been with this company for 13 years. I've only been there for 4. And I'm world heavyweight champion, and he's not. But if you remember, Sign Guy, you would know this better than anybody. He told me that I was the weak link in South America, if you remember correctly. And now he's never been world heavyweight champion, and I am world heavyweight champion. So who's the weak link now?
I do remember Paul saying that, and you have proven him wrong, of course. The last time you were with us, it was right before you won the title. You were going into that title match. Now that you've captured the championship, what has that been like for your career to hold that championship now?
You know, 10 years. I've been in this industry for 10 years. I've been in four different companies, and when you know, belts are great. It doesn't matter if you're winning the tag belts. It doesn't matter if you're winning the inner city belt. It doesn't matter if you're winning an internet title, U.S. championship. It doesn't matter. I mean, those are great to have, but to be able to hold up a championship and look at everybody out there and say, I am the best here. That's something that, you know, a year ago, I thought I'd never be able to do. I thought I'd never be able to get to that point because I've been close, but I couldn't finish it off. Now it's surreal, man. It shows everybody out there. If you're a fan of wrestling or you want to get into wrestling, this shows that if you work hard enough and you want it bad enough, anything can happen. And you see, you're right. You know, a lot of haters said that I wouldn't be here. A lot of haters said that I would never make it in World Underground Wrestling. But I've spent most of my life and most of my career proving those people wrong, like I did again, because all those haters said I'd never be a heavyweight champion. And now I'm the World Underground Wrestling heavyweight champion.
When we had you on right before the match, we could tell that it was something that meant a great deal to you going into it. You'd prepared your whole career for that opportunity, and this was just for the opportunity. It wasn't the actual title win when we had you on here. When you first were handed the title belt in the ring after you won the match, what was going through your mind knowing how much the match meant to you just to have an opportunity, let alone to win it?
The minute I held that belt in front of me, you know, it was, I don't know if you remember Sign Guy, but Shawn Michaels went into the Iron Man match with Bret the Hitman Hart for his first ever WWE heavyweight championship, the first time he ever held a WWE championship. You could see the emotion. Once you hold that belt and you just look at it and you're a kid that's always dreamed, you know, I watched the guys like Shawn Michaels. I watched the guys like The Rock, Goldberg, Hulk Hogan, you know, all the guys that can call themselves greats. And you always dream of one day being able to stand there and hold it up, but it never prepares you for the amount of emotion that comes through you. When I finally heard and knew World Underground Wrestling heavyweight champion, it's just, it overwhelms you. I mean, I tried so hard, you know, just to keep my composure. I tried so hard just to, you know, able to go into the back and then have my emotional reaction then, but it wouldn't allow me to do that. It wouldn't give me the satisfaction of walking backstage. And, you know, I'll admit it, I lost it. It was a weeping moment. I mean, it was tears of joy. You know, you finally get where everybody said you'll never be. But you see, at the same time, you know, with a lot of people, once they get to that pinnacle, it changes them. But it doesn't change me. It humbles me even more because I can look at anybody that sits in that crowd that wants to wrestle, and I can say, look, if I can do it, so can you. I mean, it's no secret that I have a lot of the mental disabilities that a lot of these people who think they can't wrestle have. And look where I am. I'm a world heavyweight champion now. And I want them to know that just because you have something that you think makes it to where you can't do something, never let that stop you. Always try for it, because if you try and fail, at least you succeeded because you tried.
As a champion, it doesn't matter which company it is, which era it is, the champion is always looked upon by the people on both sides of the curtain as a leader for the company. They're usually the face of the company, the man that the company is built around and marketed towards fans around. How is that aspect changed for you? Have you seen yourself more in a leadership role? Do you have the wrestlers kind of rallying around you looking for your direction now?
Well, I mean, that's where people don't understand is just because you become a heavyweight champion doesn't mean the locker room changes. I mean, it's the same way. We're still a bunch of guys that are back there to make sure that everybody else succeeds just as much as we do. Because when one person succeeds, the whole company succeeds. Because if we can get everybody that is succeeding with the mindset of, okay, well, my brother just did it, so I can go out there and do the same thing, you have a great show when you get people that have the same mindset. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, guys will come up and ask me, you know, how did this look bad, or did it not look, or did it not have the effect it should have? And if somebody asks me my opinion, yeah, you're darn right. I'm going to sit there and let them know if it had the impact or didn't have the impact that it was supposed to. But I do it in a way that's still a positive thing for them. See, being a champion doesn't change who you are. It just gives you a title that says you are at the top of your game. So, I mean, for me, it doesn't really change who I am. I mean, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do my job. You know, I'm going to go out there and strive to do my job bigger and better than I did it before, but I'm still going to be the same Jackson Bourne that I was and try to the best of my ability, present WWE in a way that a heavyweight champion should.
I mentioned the marketing aspect, and when you're a champion, usually you get factored into the marketing end of the promotion. You get on all the flyers and all the advertising materials. Generally, your championship match is going to be one of the key matches of every event. Looking at the marketing aspect of it, have you noticed sort of a change from what you had experienced prior to the championship to now being the champion?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm on a lot more posters. I mean, before I would get on one out of every, 12 posters a month. But you see, with the way that I see it is now that I'm the champ, you know, I've got to lead by example. So when they're putting up flyers and everything else, I've got to be the one that is pushing those flyers even more than the other person is. Or I've got to be the one that's out there on Facebook saying, hey, you know, come down to the match, blah, 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 you know, going around with the title and being able to sell the product, which I do. I mean, I go into places where I'm the heavyweight championship and, you know, it starts a conversation. You carry that belt on your shoulder anywhere you go. Somebody sees that and it starts a conversation. And that conversation can lead to a potential fan putting his butt in the seat. So if I can do that in places that are respectable for that championship to go and be able to, if I talk to 10 people and those 10 people actually show up, that's 10 more fans coming through the door. That's more money that's going towards the company, and that's more butts in the seat that can enjoy talent that we have on this roster. But you see, being a champion, you have to go above and beyond everybody else. You need to be promoting it bigger and better than everybody else is. And that's something that I try to do regardless of if I'm holding a heavyweight championship or if I'm not. I mean, I try to support my company, and I try to do it to the best of my ability. And I'm going to continue to promote and market this company because I believe in World Underground Wrestling, and I believe we have the roster that could be the next AEW.
One of the traditional roles of a champion is also to act as a talent scout. A lot of times the heavyweight champion is the guy that will recommend new talents to the promoters that they should bring in from outside areas. As someone that is now in the championship role and someone that might have a little bit more sway in the company based upon that, have you been scouting newer talents to report to the Woo America promoters, guys that might need to be on their radar?
Actually, I have, because you see, Sign Guy, this is something you might also want to check out. So I'm going to plug something really quick. You know, I work being, you know, the fan-based champion that I am. I also work for something called an EFED. It's an electronic federation.
And basically what it is it's a promo-based federation where they make match cards and everything else, and the promos are judged for the most talented promo, you know, wins the match. And I've been working with these guys, and we've got some really good indie talent in there. I mean, one guy that I've brought to, you know, Ron and Paul Preston, his name is Mad Dog Dan Moore. I believe he is up in Virginia or on that side. He's down in some of the southern areas down there. And I've been talking with him, and, you know, me and him we've grown kind of a friendship out of working for the CFED. The EFED's called NWACWF. It's Columbus Wrestling Federation. And it's affiliated. It's backed up by the National Wrestling Alliance. So, but I've been talking to some of the talent that's in this promo organization, and some of them are indie professional wrestlers. And yeah, I've asked them to, you know, do you have any matches? Do you have anything I can watch before I actually take you to my promoter so I can make sure that you're a good fit? So yeah, I mean, everywhere I go, if I can see talent that I think is worth bringing over and I think would be a good fit for World Underground Wrestling, you're darn right. I will plug any wrestler who I believe that is worth the talent and is worth us pursuing to bring over, because that just betters the company and that just takes us further.
As the champion, you're going to be having a target on your back from everybody that wants that title, which is everybody that pretty much walks through the locker room doors there. You have Paul Cerberus coming up, but there's a laundry list of contenders for that title. Everybody from Paul Preston to Sasquatch to Von Hess to Coyote to Darth Carter even, presumably, is looking at you as a target because they also want to win that heavyweight championship. How is that feeling, knowing that every time you go into the ring, all eyes are on you from the guys in the back because they want that title and they're looking for any type of weakness, any time of error that you do that they can capitalize so they can make it easier to get that title off of you? How does that make you feel?
Well, you see, at the same time, being the champ, I'm also doing the same to them. I mean, that's what people don't understand is, you know, you bring up Darth Carter, I've beat him. You bring up Sasquatch, I've beat him. You bring up Paul Cerberus, I've beat him. You bring up Ron Von Hess, he's scared of me. He doesn't even want to do one-on-one with me anymore. You know, we went into that dog collar match, and he hasn't wanted a one-on-one match with me since. So, you know, I don't have to worry about Ron Von Hess. He's too old. He can go back and suck on his oxygen tank. And, you know, he's got enough belts. He's working down in Japan. Good for him. But, you see, being the champ, you've also got to be looking at those people who might actually want your belt. I mean, you forgot one of the biggest up-and-comers, that Leah Kim or whatever. I think that's how you say it. If I butchered his name, I apologize. But that kid's a great young talent. But that's just it, young. And, you know, I'm going to be a fighting champion. If somebody wants to step in that ring, they can fall just the same, because I've got that belt now, and you're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead fingers to take it away from me. I've worked too long and hard to be where I am. And if I can lift WW up and make them the best company in the world doing it, so be it.
Obviously, there's a lot of talent at Woo America that will want that championship, but they are on Chop Block TV now, so there's a lot of eyes on the product. There's going to be people from outside of the company that will be wanting shots at that title. Do you ever hear rumors of certain guys from different promotions coming in that might be on the radar for you as potential contenders?
Well, I haven't heard of anybody yet, but I know that we are seen in 17 different countries, and we are acknowledged in 17 different countries. And, you know, like I said, I don't care if you're from Japan. I don't care if you're from the Philippines, Austria. It doesn't matter where you're from. If you're going to come to America and you're going to try to take my belt, you had better be ready to kill me, because that is how far I will go for myself. I will kill myself in order to defend that belt. So you had better be ready to die yourself if you're going to step up against me, because that is how far I will go in order to keep that championship around my waist. I mean, I have clawed, I have scraped, I have busted my ass for 10 years. I've busted my ass watching film over and over again of my old matches. What could I have done better? How could I have gotten the crowd to pop here when they were a little bit asleep? I am my own worst critic. I don't need anybody else to critique me. I critique myself. But if you're going to come down here to World Underground Wrestling America and you're going to want the WUW Intercourt Heavyweight Championship, like I said, you would be better be ready to go to the threshold of hell and back, because I sure as hell will go into hell to keep that title.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure that he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass you over to QT.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Jackson. Welcome back.
How's it going? Thank you.
Not too bad. Pretty good. Well, Jackson, Rip Oliver was recently put into a hospice, and he has had several heart attacks over the years. There's speculation that Rip Oliver may soon pass on to those pearly gates and meet a lot of those wrestlers that have graced us over the years and passed on to that wrestling ring in the sky. My question is, when you were growing up, were you a big fan of Rip Oliver? Or at least did you go back on YouTube and look up Rip Oliver videos?
No, I can't say that I have. I mean, back when I was watching it, my biggest thing was watching Shawn Michaels, one of the greatest entertainers to ever lace up a pair of boots, if not the greatest entertainer. I mean, I will now go look up Rip Oliver, but, you know, I was watching guys like Shawn Michaels. I was watching guys like Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, you know, some of the best in this business at what they do. And, you know, it gave me kind of the basis of who I became as a wrestler, watching these guys. But now, Rip Oliver, I wish him all the best of luck. He is in my prayers. I wish his family, you know, warm hugs and good vibes as they're going through this. It's not something that's easy to do.
No, it isn't. And when you go on these YouTube videos, you'll find that Rip Oliver formed a faction called the Clan. It was kind of like the Four Horsemen. And speaking of the Four Horsemen, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners who your favorite Four Horsemen was? Was it Tully Blanchard?
No. Keep guessing, QT. You'll get it eventually. There's only four of them.
Oh. Well, I'd rather not guess and cut right to the chase. Yes.
You know, you got to realize, I'm sorry, but the best Four Horsemen in the world was the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. That man stood out from all of them. I mean, all of them had a role to play, but Ric Flair was the one that stood out there. He was the flamboyant. He was the loudmouth. He was the one that said, you know, all eyes over here. And he demanded that, and he made sure that he got that. When Ric Flair walked out on a stage, he made sure that 68,000 people were looking at him. And when he walked onto the screen, just by the promos that he would do, there was millions of people around the world watching him. And he demanded that, and he got that from everybody. So if you want to ask me who the greatest Four Horsemen was in the world, that would have to be Ric Flair, hands down.
Okay, yes, he was definitely the mouth of the Four Horsemen. Do you believe Ole Anderson was kind of like the muscle and the enforcer, like kind of like in the role of you?
Arn Anderson was the muscle behind that group.
Okay.
Arn Anderson is the enforcer of the Four Horsemen. He always has been. He always will be. And he was the muscle, because that man, when he walked down to a ring with the look on his face, you knew, okay, I'm getting my ass beat, but I'm going to make sure I try to make him feel me in the morning. But you know that when he comes down there, he's going to beat the crap out of you. That was just the way Arn Anderson was, and he had no problem backing up the look on his face.
Okay.
Tully Blanchard was more of a technical wrestler. He was more of the technical part between that tag team, between him and Arn Anderson.
Okay.
I mean, he's the guy that could he's the guy that could pound for pound out wrestle anybody in the ring, and Arn Anderson was the one that could beat anybody down in the ring.
Okay. All right. What I think I'm getting from you is you're saying that Tully Blanchard might have been like a scout. In the military, in your infantry units, you have a scout that kind of goes out ahead of the main group and search and does reconnaissance. Would you say that's Tully Blanchard's role in the Four Horsemen?
Somewhat with the special ops, you know, dark ops, you know, look to him. Because if you ever saw a Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard tag match, it was always Tully Blanchard who started it out. And when you have a technical wrestler the caliber of Tully, then yeah, that's who you send out to feel out the wrestler himself and, you know, to see, you know, what he can and can't do. And then you've got Arn Anderson right there saying, okay, I've got this weakness, he limped there, he kind of stumbled here. So, you know, him and Tully used to dissect their tag teams, and that's why they were so good.
Okay. All right. I can see that. Okay, very good. Well, I do believe once you do your research on YouTube, you'll be amazed at Rip Oliver's clashes with Billy Jack Haynes.
Hmm.
Yes. And, you know,
I will have to,
you also – go ahead.
I will definitely have to check out Rip Oliver now.
Well, he faced just an unbelievable amount of talent there in the 70s. He wrestled Rocky Johnson, Brett Sawyer, and Billy Jack Haynes. And, of course, he had his feuds with Buddy Rose and Bobby Jagger and Stan Stasiak. One of the wrestlers that doesn't really get mentioned too much in Northwest wrestling folklore, Stan Stasiak. But he did bring Andre the Giant to his knees with a heart punch. Stan Stasiak.
That's tough to do. Another one that doesn't get enough is Barry Windham. He doesn't get enough credit either, and that guy was one hell of a powerhouse wrestler. I mean,
yes. Well, you know, Rip Oliver also faced Buzz Sawyer and Jay Youngblood. Have you gone on YouTube and looked up some videos of Jay Youngblood?
I've heard of Jay Youngblood, but I haven't had the pleasure of watching him. I mean, like I said, you know, with me, I wasn't in the 70s. I mean, I was born in the 70s, but, you know, I was born in 77, so I was born near the end of the 70s. But, you know, I know Soul Man Rocky Johnson. I've watched a few of his matches, and you know, I've watched somebody. A lot of people told me that my style was a lot like Barry Windham, and to go got some of his stuff. So I've looked up his stuff. You know, I've watched early Shawn Michaels. I've watched early Triple H. You know, and I've watched some of the best at what they do, trying to form what I want to evolve Jackson Bourne into. And I do a lot of that. I watch a lot of AEW guys now, like John Moxley. John Moxley is one hell of a wrestler. Now that he's evolved himself into John Moxley again, he's now the All Elite Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion. And, but you know, with me, it's, but if I hear somebody like you just talked about Rip Oliver, you know, now I'm going to have to go look him up, because the curiosity is going to get the best of me.
Okay. All right. Very good. I don't know. I kind of see you, your persona, as kind of like a Roddy Piper, a young Roddy Piper, especially when I see you come through the curtain of WUW America minus the bagpipes. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not doing bagpipes, and I'm not wearing a dress either. Thanks.
And you
but
you
know, it is a compliment, because I watched a lot of Roddy. I've watched a lot of Roddy Piper, and you know, he is the kind of face that I see myself as. I mean, he's not afraid to get his knuckles dirty, but he's still the good guy. I mean, he's the good guy that you may hate what he just did, but you can't help but like what you see. So it's one of those things that I always did the on the fence type of wrestlers, because, you know, that's the best place to be, because you get the best of both worlds.
Okay. All right. On the fence. Okay. Well, now, speaking of Rip Oliver, in July of 2016, he was part of a class action lawsuit filed against the WWE, which alleged that wrestlers incurred traumatic brain injuries during their tenure with the WWE, and then the company concealed the risk of the injuries, kind of like what the NFL did a little bit. Now, I know that you yourself have received some bumps to the head during your 10-year run as a wrestler, maybe especially against Darth Carter. Now, have you yourself recently, in the past 5 years, suffered a concussion due to a blow to the head?
Well, I mean, I've taken a lot of blows to the head. I mean, any wrestler. I mean, it's just one of those things. The type of sport that we do, it's a physical sport. Any physical sport, you're going to have that problem. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's baseball, it doesn't matter if it's football. I mean, any physical sport where you have contact with the body, you have the chance of doing that. But have I? I do not believe. Yeah, I got to think here. Actually, yes, I did. I took a it was back when I was – well, it wasn't 5 years ago, but it was pretty bad. I mean, it was about 7 years ago, I think. No, six. It was about 6 years ago, and I was working for a company called Spokane Anarchy Wrestling, and we had just you know, went from backyard wrestling into, you know, being in a ring and doing the professional thing. And I was in a street fight against a man named Dan the Renegade Rivita. And I went to do a suicide dive. He moved. I ended up landing on my head. You know, my hands weren't down, nothing. I just plastered ground. And I was literally, no lie, I was knocked out. I blacked out for the rest of the match. I had to sit there. And once I came to and I could see everything, I went back and said, Did I finish the match? Tell me I finished the match. I'm like, oh, yeah, you finished the match. We don't know how you finished the match, but somehow you got up and you finished the match. So, you know, yeah, that was, I think, one of the worst, because I went to the doctor afterwards, and I had massive swelling to my brain and spinal cord, so I had to relinquish the inner city championship that I was holding at that time.
Wow. It just it makes you kind of, when you're looking at those old fights of like Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and maybe some George Foreman, and they get hit with some of those shots, you know, and they take those years after year, you know, it kind of makes you appreciate those heavyweights. Well, anyway, the boxing, anyway.
Well, I mean, back in the time of Muhammad Ali and, you know, Will Frazier and Joe Frazier and, you know, George Foreman, that is when boxing was boxing. I mean, nowadays, you know, you have these guys that wait 6 to 8 months for a $19 million payout. And then they don't fight again for another 8 to 9 months. I mean, but, you know, George Foreman, Muhammad Ali, George Foreman, Evander Holyfield, those guys, it was every month they were in a fight. And that's when boxing was boxing. That's when tough guys were tough guys. Now the athletes that we have today, I mean, it's, I hate to say it, pansied out a lot in the way that things happen. I mean, you got football players out there that stub their toe and they actually have a name for it and they're out for 8 weeks. They call it turf toe. I mean, are you kidding me? 8 weeks for a stub toe.
Yes. Yeah. You do have a point there. The heavyweights don't fight as much as they used to. But then again, you look at they're after taxes. Some of them, I think I calculated it once, they're making something like $4,000 a second or $3,000 a second.
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of your athletes are looking at that and they go, well, why not take advantage of the situation? You know, sooner or later, even these guys that only fight twice a year will get caught in the head. You know, it is still risky.
Yeah.
It's like Tyson Fury. It's like Tyson Fury. He just became the WBC heavyweight champion. I think it was 2 weeks ago, two Saturdays ago. He just became the WBC heavyweight champion. He made $9 million off of that fight, and he has enough money that he was able to give all $9 million of it to the homeless. He just signed the check away to the homeless after the fight.
Well, now granted, I think he is a citizen of Britain, and Britain is known for their unbelievable tax system, even worse than ours. So that may have been like, according to them and their tax system, it might have been a $6 million payday. No.
That was U.S. That fight was fought here. If he fights a fight here, that fight was here in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Uh-huh.
They didn't fight over there. He fought here, so he gets the U.S. payday. It was a $9 million payout that he signed off to the homeless.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yes. Okay. Well, and sadly, to end this boxing and concussion discussion, I'm afraid that Evander Holyfield is now showing signs of Parkinson's disease and dementia, much like Muhammad Ali was. Yes.
Right.
Evander Holyfield. Okay. Boy, that's rough. Okay. Well,
Evander Holyfield had some rough fights. I mean, he was one of those. All of those guys that you mentioned were fighting champions. I mean, it didn't matter who they were. It didn't matter how much bigger than them they were. It didn't matter. They went out there and they fought because that's what you do. And like me, I'm a fighting champion. It doesn't matter if you're 350 pounds. I'm going to walk out there and you're going to be feeling me in the morning. And like I told Sign Guy, you know, with Evander Holyfield and everybody else, you were going to have to kill them or come close to it in order to take that belt off of them. And to do that, you have to be ready to die yourself, because that could be where you go at that point. So any champion feels that you're going to have to take me above and beyond where I am willing to go in order to take that belt off of me. And where I'm willing to go is further than you're willing to go.
Wow. That's kind of what Steve Prefontaine said when he was doing all that running at the University of Oregon. You're going to have to bleed to beat me. That's what he said.
Exactly. Well, it was kind of like Rocky's speech in Rocky IV. I mean, he was talking about the Russian, and he said that the Russian was going to have to kill him in order to win that fight. But in order to kill me, he's got to be ready to die himself, and he's got to stand there toe-to-toe with me. I mean, that was a very inspirational, because that's what any champion feels, and that's what any fighter feels. In order to beat me, you're going to have to be willing to go above and beyond what I'm willing to do to you. But what I'm willing to do to you is always, in my mind, going to be more than you're willing to do.
See, at the opposite end of it.
Go ahead.
It's at the opposite end of the spectrum. You have QT Vokes in the ring. If you look at me, there's a red hot trail of smoke leading to the locker room, especially with Dave the Beast Barnett. Yes. Yes. Okay.
But you see, being a champion the way that I am, that is where these people are going to have to put their mindset if they want to beat me. Because like Paul Cerberus comes up March 14th. That boy better be ready to walk through the pits of hell, because I'm willing to walk through hell just to keep that title.
Wow. Okay. I'm definitely going to try to be there. I know that I have been absent a little bit from WUW America for the past few months, and I'm you mentioned Leah Kim to Sign Guy earlier, and I haven't seen this prospect. How big does this Leah Kim go, or how big is he physically, and does he outweigh Darth Carter by about 20 pounds? That's what I'm asking.
I think he outweighs Darth Carter by a lot more than that. Darth Carter is only like 65 pounds soaking wet. I can bench press the dude.
Well,
Leah Kim is, he's built. I mean, he's
he's smaller than me, but he's built like a brick shit house. I mean, that's the way it is. The guy's huge. And the guy's talented, and I'm going to proud to watch where this kid's going to be in 10 years. When I'm sitting there and I'm coming up on my 20-year anniversary in this sport, I want to see where Leah Kim is at that point, because if he keeps the drive, fire, and passion that he has, the sky's the limit on where he could go.
Oh, okay. Does he remind you somewhat of Aaron Bolo?
He reminds me of a young Shawn Michaels, because Shawn Michaels had that drive, and Shawn Michaels wasn't going to stop until he made it where he needed to go. And you know that it's passion and fire like that that drives some of the greatest in this business, because they have the passion, they have the fire in order to love the business enough to be willing to sacrifice everything there is to sacrifice in order to do it to the best of their ability.
All right. Well said. Very good. Okay. Well, Jackson, you talked to Sign Guy earlier about how emotional you were after you finally claimed heavyweight gold. Do you think emotionally you would have the same high if someday you are elected to the Cauliflower Alley Club Hall of Fame?
Oh, that would be awesome. It would be another great accolade in my career. I mean, if I could be into the Cauliflower Alley Hall of Fame, that's a noble place to be. I mean, I think Shawn Michaels is even in that Hall of Fame. So I'd be completely honored. And yeah, I'd be just as emotional and hyped for that as I was for the heavyweight champion win.
Okay.
Hall of Fame's immortalize you. Once you get into a Hall of Fame, that kind of makes that name stand out, because especially Cauliflower Alley, because there's been some greats that have wrestled there. And, you know, hopefully someday I'll be wrestling there.
Well, Jackson, it's occurred to me that I have never heard any Aerosmith music played at WUW at La Problemitas. If you yourself had a choice of these three songs, which one of them would you pick? Would it be Same Old Song and Dance off their 1974 album Get Your Wings? Would it be Sweet Emotion off their album Toys in the Attic? Or would it be Back in the Saddle off their 1976 album Rocks?
That's tough. I mean, it's Sweet Emotion is a great song. I love that song. But Back in the Saddle is a good song too. And I mean, Back in the Saddle is a, you know, kind of somewhat of a comeback song. So, you know, it'd be tough, but I'd have to go Sweet Emotion. I'd have to go that one.
Whoa. Okay. It's my fondest wish that I can see someday I will see Sasquatch enter the ring with Back in Saddle off the album Rocks. That would be huge. Yes.
Yeah, you'd have to talk to Squatch about that. I don't know if he's going to do that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Jackson, on the last card at La Problemitas, Sarah Irene pinned Mr. Sexy Pants, Paul Preston, to capture the Chop Block TV title. Can you see Sarah Irene going 2-0 when she wrestles on March 14th at the Call of the Heroes? Can you see her going extending?
Sarah Irene's a great wrestler. I mean, she's a great comeback story too. She's coming off of, I believe it's her shoulder that she injured. I'm not really sure about that, but it was an arm injury. So she's coming off of that, and she's finally getting back into the ring after quite a bit of an absence. So to see her winning and doing so well is awesome. I mean, she is a great competitor. I can see her going on a long streak. I mean, anybody that can beat Sunny Days multiple times can beat just about anybody, because Sunny Days is one of the greatest female wrestlers that I've seen. So, you know, I believe in Sarah Irene. I believe she can do it. So, you know, I'll be rooting for her.
Okay. All right. And also at the Call of Heroes, you have the Lucha Revolution facing Dark Matter for the WUW World International Triple Crown Tag Team Championships. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners a little bit about who this Lucha Revolution is?
I don't really know. I mean, I've seen some of the Lucha guys that are there. They're a great talent. And I don't know who is involved in that tag team at this time. I've had my own things going on, but I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's Polaris and somebody else. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, they're going to have their hands full with Dark Matter. I mean, I've been against Dark Matter, and if Paul Cerberus wouldn't have turned on me, then we probably would be sitting here Triple Crown champions, but we're not, because that's for another day. And, you know, at the beginning of the match between me and Paul, he paid for that, so that it all works out. But, you know, Lucha Revolution should be walking into this, you know, doing their homework, because if they don't, and they don't, you know, if they don't pay attention and they don't do their homework on this tag team, they're going to lose, because that's what everybody else does, is underestimates them, and that's what you don't do against that tag team.
Now, Jackson, talking about doing your homework, I believe that Sarah Irene is about to receive her teaching degree. In fact, I think she already graduated and has a teaching degree. Talk about juggling your profession with wrestling. That's very admirable.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm proud of her. You know, she went after what she wanted to do. She went after her dream, and she's continuing to, you know, accelerate at her other dream. I mean, having more than one dream is totally awesome, as long as you're not stretching yourself too thin in order to accomplish both. And I see Sarah as doing, evening them both out well. You know, Monday through Friday, she's a school teacher, or Monday through Thursday, or whatever her hours are. And then, you know, on the weekend, she's a pro wrestler, and I admire her for it. I mean, it's a hard thing to juggle, but I see her doing it really well, and I'm proud as hell of her.
Have you seen the episode of The Sign of the Times, which involved Sarah Irene and was shot at La Problemita's? I consider it one of the top 10 Sign of the Time videos ever shot. Have you seen that one involving Sarah Irene with The Sign of the Times?
Really, really, QT? Really? You picked that one to be one of your top 10? You know, he did interview me when I was Inner City Champion in that back area, and I thought that one was pretty good too.
Oh, okay. I consider them tied. Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's better. Don't make me have to beat you up on the 14th, all right? But, no, I haven't watched it. Hopefully, Jason will hopefully Sign Guy will tag me in it, and I'll watch it later.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
but you know what Sign Guy hasn't done?
What's that?
He hasn't shot one of his Signs of the Times with the World Underground Wrestling Heavyweight Champion.
Oh, well, okay. I'm sure that'll be on Sign Guy's itinerary in the near future. Yes.
It better be. Or I might have to picture him as Darth Carter.
You know,
they're about the same.
Never seen Darth Carter in a Sign of the Times. Just kind of disappointing. Yes.
I know, but Darth Carter doesn't say much anyway, you know, usually because he's eating somebody's fist or eating somebody's boot or eating canvas. I mean, you know.
I slightly underestimate Darth Carter for some reason. Yes.
So I underestimate Darth Carter a lot, because, you know, when he shows me something that I need to care about, then maybe I won't underestimate him so much.
Okay. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you,
Sign Guy.
For the record, Darth Carter was on an episode of The Sign of the Times, and he was promptly chased off by Stompin' Steve. Just for the record.
Yeah, he's great at running.
He ran from me multiple times.
Like I said, he's really good at running. I think that's his best arsenal when it comes to in-ring competition.
Yeah, I don't know how he keeps showing back up time after time, but we are down to the last few minutes, Jackson, so I want to give you plenty of time. Anything you want to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything and everything you got, the social medias, the upcoming shows, guys, your favorite library.
All right. Well, I do want to plug for the World Underground Wrestling March 14th. We're coming in there, and it's going to be a great show. And, 2624 6th Street, La Poblanita's Mexican restaurant out there in Bremerton, Washington. Come on down, see some great talent. See me defend the heavyweight title. See some other great talent down there because we have a roster full of it. But I also want to say, if you guys are on Facebook and you guys just want to have a good time, look up NWACWF there. It's a great eFed. It's a lot of fun. You can come in there and watch some of the promotional work that we do and everything else. So you're on Facebook, look up NWACWF. And we have a lot of other ones like PWS Savage and, KWF, Kings Wrestling Federation. So check all that out.
Well, Jackson, I want to thank you for being with us today. I appreciate you taking the time to do so. We will plan on filming The Sign of the Times in a couple of weeks.
All right, buddy. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Fans, definitely get out there, support Jackson Bourne as he continues to defend the Woo America Heavyweight Championship. Next fight against Paul Cerberus, so get out there and check out that match. Should be a great one. We will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we will have Royce Isaacs out of the NWA. And then a week from today, Satu will be with us. Great Samoan wrestler out of the Midwest area. I think you'll be impressed with him. He'll join us then. You can find myself and QT at Blue Collar Wrestling later today. So join us if you're in the Portland area, and we'll talk to you soon.